Ron Sturgis will play and sing for us.
Come out of the sadness, wherever you've been. Come brokenhearted, bless you begin. Come find your blessing, the seeker come. Earth has no sorrow, heaven is revealed. Earth has no sorrow, that heaven can't feel. So lay down your burdens. Lift up your face, O wanderer, come home. You're not too far. So lay down your hurt, lay down your heart, come as you are. There's hope for the hopeless and all those who stray. You sit at the table. Rest that endures. Earth has no sorrow that heaven can cure. So lay down your burdens. Lay down your shame. All who are broken, lift up your face, O wanderer, come home. You're not too far. Lay down your hurt, lay down your heart, come as you are, come as you are. Fall in his arms. Sinner, be still. Earth has no sorrow that heaven can't feel. Earth has no sorrow that heaven can't feel. So lay down your burdens, lay down your shame.
Sing that song this morning because I thought it embodied you. You, everyone was welcome exactly where they are, no matter what. Our speaker this morning is also our special music this morning. Ron is a retired Navy chaplain. He served 33 years in the U.S. Navy, Coast Guards, and Marines. For those of you who don't know him, he was also a United Church of Christ ordained minister. Ron taught psychology and military resiliency courses. Now he's a full-time dad and Boy Scout leader. During college summers, Ron was a ranger at Philmont Scout Ranch near Red River, New Mexico. He has a BS in psychology from the University of West Florida, a Master's of Divinity from New Orleans Seminary, and a Master of Theology from Duke University, and a PhD in psychology from North Central University. And boy, I'm glad he's done studying. First 10 years of our marriage, he was studying. And I am his wife, Laura. He has three children, Brad, 28, who just got married to Sarah, who's 27, our new daughter-in-law. Kayleen is 26, Ronald is 10. We have a schnauzer named Princess, a cat named Fluffy, and a turtle named Chung. Today, Ron is going to talk about church positivity, tips for keeping a spiritual community healthy.
Well, this is a lot less nerve-wracking than singing, I'll tell you that much. And don't worry, I won't quit my day job. So. Okay, so the last time I spoke here, I discussed the efficacy of positive psychology as it relates primarily to the individual. I talked about how increasingly scientific studies are showing that optimistic people tend to be healthier, wealthier, happier, and live longer than do their pessimistic counterparts. Today, I'd like to focus on how positive psychology impacts communities and organizations. I'll draw from some sources that you might be familiar with, as well as from my own experience. First, let's address some areas where pessimism or negativity can adversely impact community development. And the reason I think that's important is because Mountain Light's starting to grow, doing some new things. And any time an organization starts to grow, the potential for conflict arises, communication issues arise, and it's important to be honest about that, to recognize that, and also to be able to deal with those kinds of issues effectively. So anyway, one area that produces a lot of negativity and damage to community formation is bad communication and the inability to deal effectively with conflict. I'll never forget one day I was driving down the road with my best friend, who's a Methodist minister, and he was also my roommate in seminary, and he said, "There's the other half of my church." I said, "Really?" He said, yeah, they split over he said this happened long before I got there, but he said they split over the color they were going to paint the bathroom. I said, nah, you're kidding me. He said, no, I'm not kidding you. They split over arguments they had about the color they were going to paint the bathroom. So they obviously didn't know how to communicate effectively, and they didn't know how to deal with conflict. I'll never forget when I was stationed with the 8th Coast Guard District as a chaplain. There were UCC churches in the area, and when I was in town and I didn't have Sunday obligations, I would volunteer to do pulpit supply for the churches that didn't have full-time ministers. So I was invited to preach at a church one Sunday, and they were thinking about, they were trying to sell their church, and they were going to build a new church that was closer to the interstate so that they could attract more people to grow. Well, I learned in short order why that was probably going to be impossible. During the announcement time, one of the deacons stood up and started talking about selling the church, and they got into a big argument right there in the middle of the service. And finally, this deacon said, "Sit down and shut up and let the preacher preach." Well, that really put me in the mood to speak. But they obviously did not know how to communicate, nor did they know how to deal with conflict effectively. When I was command chaplain at Bangor Sub Base, I was also the regional chaplain there at one point, and I had 20 plus chaplains that I provided supervision for, that I was responsible for. But in my chapel, as the command chaplain, I had two Catholic priests who were both in their 50s, and they were constantly arguing. And I was constantly having to pull them in my office and say, "Look, you guys, your brother priests, you know, you're supposed to be the one setting the example, and you're older than I am. You got more years in ministry than I do. It's embarrassing me. I mean, yeah, I outrank you, but it's embarrassing for me to have to tell you to get along." You know, I mean, I couldn't believe it. It was, and Laura can tell you this, I was under a lot of stress because trying to get these chaplains to get along was nuts. I couldn't believe it. I mean, these people are supposed to be clergy. So, and there were a lot of times when I was aboard the carrier when I saw it too, with religious kinds of people in community, the arguments that would ensue. I could tell you stories, but there were a lot of days where I thought, man, I wish I was in the cockpit of one of those F-18s. You know, I'd rather be doing that. So, communication and the ability to deal with conflict can be a real problem in growing spiritual communities. That's the point I'm trying to make. Another area that can create negativity and thwart community development is poor use of texting and social media. When using social media, it's easy for things to be lost in translation and to be misunderstood. We need to be careful and thoughtful about what we text and post to ensure that the message that we intended is the message that was communicated. A good rule of thumb for social media use is to ensure that emails, texting, and posting are marked by kindness, and that you wouldn't be ashamed to have any of your social media writing published in a journal or paper or on a news media station that you respect. That's a good rule of thumb. And I'll give you an example. I was in charge of putting together an interfaith service. Actually, it was for a Wood Badge, a scouting program. And I was trying to, I had one lady that was in charge of the music portion, and we were texting back and forth about songs that she wanted to do. And one of the songs that she wanted to do was Down to the River to Pray. And my connection with that was, you know, the movie, Oh Brother, How Art Thou? And I was like, I don't really think that's probably going to work with a big group of scouters at a, you know, a camp setting. So I'm texting her back and forth about this, and she texts me and says, well, I don't feel like I'm a part of this process. And I thought to myself, you know, this is more about me and my opinion. And you know what? I need to stop texting her and call her. And that's what I did. That very moment, I called her and I said, you know what? I am really sorry that I made you feel like you're not a part of this process. And I apologize for that. And you know what? I think this will be a great song for us to use. As a matter of fact, you're in charge of the songs. We'll use all the songs you want to use. And we did, and they were great. You know. But the point is, social media, you know, we got to be careful with that. And it's easy sometimes for people to hide behind that and to get their little digs in. You know what I'm talking about. It's easy to not be face to face with somebody and to tell somebody off in a text, you know. So in a growing community, especially in a spiritual community, it's important, I think, for us to be very careful with that, you know. And let's go old school. If there's something important or a potential hot topic, let's call somebody. Or better yet, let's go see them face to face and talk it out. Does that make sense? Yeah, I think so. So social media can be great for communicating to a large number of people, but it can also do a lot of damage if not used thoughtfully and intentionally. Another area that can derail the formation of positive, healthy community is the hijacking of meetings or elements of meetings, or inappropriate use of community meetings or elements of such meetings. And I'll give you an example of that. When I was director of Credo Hawaii, Credo was a Navy program, and we did retreats. It's an awesome program, and still in existence today. They do personal growth retreat, marriage enrichment retreats, team building retreats, family retreats, spiritual growth retreats. They're just awesome. Actually, one of these days I'd like to do a talk just about what we did there, because they were life-changing events. I can't say enough about them. But we would have large group meetings and small group meetings. And I can remember sometimes in large group meetings, you might have one individual, usually an extreme extrovert, and they would want to hijack the group meeting. And what I mean by hijacking is they would go on and on and on about their issues, you know. And as a group leader, I learned that I had to be very careful. And I just from experience, I got good at it. You know, but I had to shut them down, because we only had so much time, and everybody in the family, in the community, needed to have a voice, and she was taking up time for those voices. So I would have to politely say, you know what, I really appreciate your sharing, and I appreciate what you have to say. But we only have so much time, and if it's okay, I'd really like to to hear from some of the other, our other brothers and sisters in this group. Would that be okay with you? What's she going to say to that?
No.
Yeah. Sometimes, yeah, sometimes they'd say no. Then I'd have to take another topic. But that's what I mean by hijacking. That's an example of it. Sometimes there have been worship services I've attended where announcements are inappropriately long or testimony times are used to scold instead of expressing a joy or concern. Also, it's best for community members that have conflict to work it out offline or outside of formal community meetings so that the integrity of the meeting is maintained and the interest of potential community members is sustained. And that goes back to what I was saying about the argument that ensued at that meeting I was at, you know, where I was the guest preacher. I mean, imagine the visitors, what they were thinking. You think they wanted to come back to that? Yeah, we wouldn't come back and see those people argue about their building, you know? And I didn't want to come back and preach there, I'll tell you that much. And I didn't. So, yeah, it's important to keep those things in mind. Additionally, it's always best to offer constructive criticism in private. And all of you that have been in the military or in business, you know this. It's always best to offer constructive criticism in private and praise in public. We should be guided by the golden rule. I mean, that can't be understated. And finally, and I'm going to move on to the positive stuff here, I promise. Finally, a difficult area that can destroy community formation is allowing pathology in any form to grow and fester. I'll never forget attending, when I was stationed in San Diego, Robert Schuller used to put on an Institute for Successful Church Leadership. You laugh. But I actually it was good because he would bring in all these guest speakers from all over the country and the world. But, you know, he was building his crystal cathedral. But it was interesting. He made a statement one day that stuck with me. He said, "I chose very carefully who I would fail with." And they had a vision of what they wanted to do. And evidently there were some people that didn't want to get on board with that vision. And they had to move on. And I can remember when I was in my parish, I had a deacon. And he wanted me to be charismatic, speak in tongues. You ever speak in tongues, Peter? You speak in an English tongue. So I showed him my ordination paper, United Church of Christ. And I said, you know, this church hired me to be an ordained minister in the United Church of Christ. And I'm not charismatic. I can't be something I'm not. And this church is about this denomination. And, you know, if you don't want to be a part of this fellowship, and this is something that you need, then maybe you need to find a fellowship that fulfills that need, you know. So there are instances where, and maybe failure is not the right word, but there are instances where we have to let some people go that can't be a part of our community because they don't have buy-in to what our community is about. And that's okay. That's okay. The other side of that is, if one or a group of individuals are sowing discord within the community, then they should be lovingly confronted in keeping with the bylaws of that particular community. If the damaging behavior does not stop and continues to hurt the community, then regrettably, the person or persons should be asked to detach from the fellowship after exhausting all appropriate avenues for reconciliation. Okay. Another example I'd give you is my first sermon was at a church in Baker, Florida. And it was a sermon about reconciliation. And here I was, a young man in my 20s, and I preached my heart out, and I looked out into a congregation, and nothing. It was flat. I mean, it was terrible. I thought, man, I better find another business. I'm awful. Well, it was a Navy chaplain that had hooked me up with this opportunity, and he called me. He said, how did it go? And I was like, man, it was terrible. I bombed. And he said, well, what did you preach about? And I told him the passage, and I said, you know, I preached about reconciliation. He said, oh, my God. He said, I preached the same sermon. He said, God's trying to talk to him. He said, let me tell you what's going on in that church. He said, you got two brothers that hate each other. And he said, they have the church divided in half, and it's dying. And he said, they thought that you and I must have had confided in one another about this. But he said, that's the message they need to hear. They need to come together. But he said, these two brothers are absolutely destroying the church. So anyway, I mean, we have to be prepared in community to deal with pathology if it pops up, and to deal with it in a way that is helpful to the community. So, moving on, what are some elements of or characteristics of healthy communities, quickly? They create a safe place where people can come as they are and be accepted with unconditional positive regard. And I was telling you about Credo. The cool thing about Credo was it was a 72-hour weekend. It started on a Thursday night and it ended on a Sunday afternoon. Everybody was scared to death on Thursday. We took their were there cell phones in? I don't think there were. Anyway, we took their watches. We took, you know, if they had cell phones, I can't even remember. It's terrible. Pagers, yeah, thanks. Anyway, we didn't want them to worry about any of that stuff, but they were scared. And then we did things. We had group dynamic kinds of activities that made them get to know each other quickly, and also made them feel safe rapidly and really quickly. I mean, it's interesting. We called them personal growth retreats, and everybody thought we were going to get up there and say, here are 10 steps for how to personally grow. That wasn't what it was about. It was about, we're going to play some music that deals with issues, and then we're going to sit in a circle and we're going to play some music that deal with grief and loss, some music that deals with abuse, some music that deals with daddy issues, mommy issues, I mean, a variety of different things, and then we're going to just be quiet. People would start popping like popcorn and talking. And by Sunday, they didn't want to leave because community had formed. And you know why it formed? They felt safe. They felt safe. And when I started at Credo, they were trying to do all this psychodrama stuff and all this stuff. I didn't do any of that. And I told my team, we had a team because it was such a dynamic experience. I said, all we got to do is make them feel safe, and community is going to happen. And it did, in a powerful way. So real community is about creating a safe place. Psychiatrist Sandra Bloom wrote a book called Creating Sanctuary, and her subtitle is, get this, Toward the Evolution of Sane Societies. She discovered the same thing. She went to an institution as a director, and she said, I tried using all my psychiatric tricks that I was taught, and she said they didn't work. You know, we used the DSM-4, gave them all labels, and they stayed sick. And we medicated them. They stayed sick. And we were just perpetuating their mental illness. And we were, you know, we were the ones there to fix them, and we kept them sick. So she said, I tried something new. We said that they were one of us, and they were human beings, and we were part of their community. We wanted to listen to them and hear their stories. And we made them feel safe, and they started to tell their stories, and they started to get better. So I can't say enough about creating a safe place where people feel welcome. Back to that song that it didn't do so good, but come as you are. Be who you are. And you don't have to be like me. You don't have to believe the way I do. You know? You don't have to look the way I do. You don't have to dress the way I do. You be you. I'll be me. And we can be us together. That's what makes community in a powerful way. Safety requirements. No fear. Perfect love casts out fear. No toxic shame. Laura and I were recently at an event. And it was sad. It was a party. And this young man lived there with his parents. He's struggling. Probably in his early 30s. He's struggling. He's had some psychological issues. But we were playing a game, and the game was tell two truths and one lie about yourself. And one of his truths was he worked for NPR. And one of the people there, one of the ladies there said, oh no, you didn't work for NPR, did you? Oh, say it isn't so, say it isn't so. You shouldn't have worked for NPR. And she shamed him. And he just dropped his head. And Laura and I, later we affirmed him. I told him, man, I dig NPR. I love NPR. I said, man, it must have been awesome to work for NPR. Tell me about it. I want to hear about it. You know, where were you? What did you do? Did you get to be a part of All Things Considered? All Songs Considered? Tell me about it. I want to hear it. You know, I love NPR. Anyway, you know, it's safe. Communities that are growing, that are positive and optimistic, are safe places where there's no fear, there's no shame. There are no club requirements, except for human courtesy, uncommon human courtesy and respect. Safe, optimistic communities, they create a spirit of cooperation that encourages information sharing, group problem solving, and the creative exploration of new ideas. When I was in the military, we had to do this dimming thing called total quality leadership. And it was interesting. You may remember this, Bruce, from your days. But his whole thing was, and he was big in industry. His whole thing was, you know, if you want industry to be successful, he said, you got to remove fear from the workplace. And he said, you have to create a spirit of cooperation. And he said, also remove competition from the workplace. He said, because when you do that, people will share information. And they'll actually work together, and they won't backstab. Makes sense to me. The problem with the military was there's fear everywhere. There was competition everywhere. So I don't even know why they were using that. But, you know, even in industry, they recognize the value of creating a safe place for community to be successful and to grow, at least the ones that are growing and that are successful. Covey, in his book, and I just started to revisit this, by the way, great book. It's an old book, but it's good. But he's got one habit, and I won't spend a lot of time on it, but it's habit 4. It says win-win. Think win-win. You know, growing communities, it's all about, it's not about win-lose or lose-win, you know? It's win-win. In anything that we do at Mountain Light, we should be thinking win-win. You know, how can you win? How can I win? You know, or if we're dealing with another scenario, how can we think win-win? We want it to be a win all the way around. It just makes sense. It's the right thing to do. I mean, we're not the NFL, right? It's not about win-lose. We're not looking to win the trophy. We're looking to win-win. Okay, I better move on. My time's on up, probably. Positive, optimistic communities, they communicate effectively. Another habit that Covey has, it's called principles of empathetic communication. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. Makes sense to me. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. You know? When I used to do marriage retreats at Credo, it was all about communication. We used to have this thing called the floor, or the speaker-listener technique. And you know the person who had the floor was the speaker, and you would make your case, and then the other person had to restate what you said before you could give the floor. And they had to actually say, okay, you got what I said, and then they would give you the floor, and then the other person would come back. And it was especially valuable when you hit a hot topic because it brought structure into the conversation. So couples found it extremely helpful. Active listening. The art of listening well and really hearing what the speaker is saying. Most people are formulating opinions or responses while the speaker is speaking, and miss the totality of what is being fully said. Extroverts especially have a tendency to jump into another sentences. I had a buddy who was, he was a chaplain, terrible, I mean, counselor, communicator. He was so extroverted. I would try to sit down and talk with him. I couldn't get a word in edgewise. I told him, Wes, I said, man, if you're doing this in counseling, person's not getting counseled because you're talking all the time. I can't even talk to you. I mean, he just, you could tell he couldn't stand holding back. And I said, you need to just learn to listen, you know. And Mike, you know this from your time, a lot of counseling is just listening. You talk about a therapeutic practice. It's the ability to listen and to listen well. And that's such a big part of communication. The other thing, piece of communication comes from an old, old book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. You get a lot more with honey than you do with vinegar. You know? How do you think this building, you guys got this building? Or you guys, I'm a member here. How do you think we got this building? There are some people that wrote some sweet letters, and they just kept them coming, right? Do you write some of those letters, Terry? Is that you? Sweet letters. Honey, honey, honey. You get a lot more with honey than you do with vinegar. Okay. We're talking about characteristics of healthy, optimistic communities. I'm almost done. Hang with me, please. Another point, another characteristic of healthy, optimistic communities is they leverage the strength and gifts of group members for the benefit of the community. People with organization skills are put in positions to organize. People with skills in finance use those to benefit the community. Teachers teach. Musicians play and sing, artists create, and teams or committees synergize the skill diversity of community members so that multiple perspectives can be considered for various projects. Makes sense. Another point is they provide meaningful social support. meaningful social support. Optimistic communities are caring communities that offer empathic, compassionate support when someone or a group are in crisis or need. Authentic spiritual communities are very concerned about social issues and social justice. The value of social support cannot be overstated. Research has shown that social support has profound positive impact for mitigating suicide risk factors, reducing PTSD symptomology, increasing the lifespans of cancer patients, easing the pain of grief, and I wrote my dissertation about this, mitigating risk factors associated with human pregnancy, and fostering healing in a number of areas. Social support. Communities that are optimistic and growing support each other and support the community at large. And Mountain Light leads out in doing that. Optimistic communities are open and willing to change and grow. Many churches today are dying because they are unwilling to change with the times. Growing organizations and communities welcome change and often are leaders in change. And you see that in some of these booming churches because Laura and I recently went to one just for research because they're having new approaches to worship. Optimistic communities are willing to rise above individual egos for the sake of the health, welfare, and betterment of the group. Community members have a spiritual maturity that is slow to get feelings hurt and quick to take the higher road and think the best of others. I love, love, love the scene in Star Trek where Spock says, "The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one." Remember that scene? And in growing optimistic community, that's certainly true. Optimistic communities are flexible, welcoming, warm, loving, kind, giving, patient, forgiving, inclusive, and accepting of themselves and others. I'm almost done. Almost! Optimistic communities deal with conflict maturely and effectively. They understand that mistakes will happen within community and endeavor to work through conflict with kindness so that a win-win can happen and they can learn from each experience. And lastly, optimistic communities have the spirit of... Here it is. Drum roll, please. They have the spirit of... Ohana! Y'all know what Ohana is?
No.
Any of y'all ever been to Hawaii?
Yes.
Family! Spirit of family. And in Hawaii, you say Ohana, man, they know exactly what that means. Family, heart, love, warmth. Welcome. Unconditional love. That's what it is. Mountain Life, when I got here, I felt welcome. That's why I'm here. From the first day, I felt unconditional love. And that's why I stay. I love this place. And I appreciate being a part of it. Thanks for inviting me to come and speak. By the way, that's my Father's Day present that Ronald brought me. Father's Day, I told you about. Finally, in closing, wait, I'm not done. Live long and prosper.
Any questions? Stay here. Any questions or comments? You forgot this part.
Yes, sir.
Historically, you know, we were probably the largest congregation a couple hundred years ago. And now we are one of the smallest churches. I have been at UU just long enough to see some transitions in the struggle to try to grow. And I don't mean just this church, I'm talking about as a faith. In the 80s, to be a Unitarian Universalist, you were basically a humanist. It was a humanistic. There was very little Jesus or God or any trappings of that kind of a church. And I have seen us come back to more of a spiritual path toward a universal faith, and I think of it as the great mystery. But the mystery is back, where when I joined the church, we didn't explore that mystery. So maybe that's one of the reasons we are growing, I don't know. But you hit some points relative to growth, which this church has struggled with in the past. I'm talking about this congregation right here. And learning that kind of that family, I think that is what has made us here right now. Coupled with the changes that I have seen since the 80s. But anyway, I didn't mean to take so much time. I just wanted to. That's my path, my history.
Good. Thank you. Anyone else?
Said. Yeah, I would just say, I just will second what Mom said. This is a wonderful community. That's why we keep coming back.
All the way from Chattanooga.
Yeah, right. But anyway. The appeal to me of the Unitarian, I hate to use the word church, to me as a community, is the social justice. I think that's what binds most people, rather than the religious aspect. But I just want to say that Sukara and I recently studied, and we have to go over it again, Aristotle's Ethics. I just thought it was just like the Ten Commandments, you know, you follow the rules and you know, you'll be happy at the end of it. But it's incredibly interesting, and I never studied ethics at school, and I think that's one of the things that should be, you know, civics and ethics two of the most important things. You don't need the Ten Commandments if you follow Aristotle's Ethics.
But that's enough. Speak. That's what you should come and speak to us about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyone else?
This is my first time to the Universalist Church, although I've been looking since the 80s at it, when I left the Presbyterian Church in the 60s. And interestingly, this morning, I went back to an Episcopal church, which I had been going to, but I left 3 years ago, because I was interested in a book that they were going to be discussing. And I got there late, and I was there for all of 7 minutes. And I said, no, this isn't what I want. I want family. I want unity. And I want love. And so I'm really hoping things work out.
Welcome.
Thank you.
John?
I just want to make a comment in your talk that, you know, some of the things that you were pointing out about using social methods to criticize or complain, to be open in a forum, to condemn somebody else, those types of things. I think in our day now, particularly our political environment, where we have politicians that are just condemning people just in front of others, or you know, or twittering to pieces, that this church is a refuge from all that. And that I think your point is well taken, that we should make a point in the church not to go on this bandwagon with all the others, to be critical or condemning of others, because we get enough of that outside of here. So when we come in these doors, we need to have an open welcome environment. So I appreciate those comments.
Thank you. Good.
Bruce?
More of what that open welcoming environment requires is that word unconditional. We talk about unconditional acceptance, unconditional love. That unconditional part requires a degree of discipline that is observable, if not measurable, in behavior. And it's an emotional discipline to the degree of sacrifice. It's a sacrificial discipline. And it's really hard to do that, to unconditionally accept somebody that is very different. Requires a sacrifice on our part that we just have to remind each other is important. We're never going to get this. That's aspirational. Oh, I summed it there. But that's really hard. That sacrificial discipline.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sturgis. And.